If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group, or if you've had an experience with manipulation or abuse of power you'd like to share, leave us a message on our hotline number at 513-900-2955.
Or shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers,
don't.
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cult, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two farm girls who've actually experienced it. I am Lola Blanc.
And I am Megan Elizabeth.
I really am a farm girl. Are you a farm girl?
No.
Oh, well.
I'm from Kansas. It's kind of farmy, but no.
Close enough. Today's guest and next week's guest is Sinasta Kaluchi. He is a former member of hippie Christian fundamentalist group 12 Tribes. The group owns a chain of restaurants called the Yellow Deli. Maybe you've eaten at it. We're going to talk all about it. So today he's going to tell us about how he grew up in Detroit, sometimes going without eating, and how he found 12 Tribes when looking to live and work on a farm through a regular program that helps workers find farms to work at. And then how he joined the community despite their talk about the end times.
We'll also talk about how he was given a new name and had to sleep in quarters with other single men, the controversy about the practice of child training, how they had to give their assets to the group, and how the group was preparing the 144,000 for the end of the world.
Love, Sinasta. Before we dive in, Megan, just what's your coldies thing?
I have a really good one, and I mean that as it's kind of bad, but it's good.
Okay.
You'll see. So Pat Robertson, you know, the 700 Club, well, he's come out of the woodwork to say that Putin is being controlled by God. This isn't about Ukraine. He is bringing about the Armageddon and the end of times. This is actually about Israel. So he is on national television telling old people this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wait, it's because of God. Because why?
Because it's just, you know, the end times are supposed to happen now, which is also, you know, it's just so funny that no one can help but see the world through their very small lens. So it's so interesting. As they get older and older and older, they're like, the world is ending. Because it's like, no, your world is ending.
You're about to die.
Yeah, we're fine, actually.
It's so terrifying to me how anytime something catastrophic or horrible or disastrous happens, or evil in this case, people who have this apocalypse mentality and are waiting for the end times see it as a good thing, because it's a sign that Jesus is going to come back. Like,
right.
That is so, 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 so dangerous. Like, because no, like, you're not going to take action. I mean, not that that guy's Pat Robertson is taking action, but like, collectively as a framework, it's so dangerous, because that is going to lead to inaction.
Absolutely.
On all kinds of preventable death and disaster.
I remember like getting really upset about the rainforest getting cut down in third grade and crying and crying and crying. And my dad being like, Megan, Jesus is going to come back to the earth before anything happens. Like, it's okay. It's just this way of like completely turning off to the needs of our planet. And
right.
Even as a third grader, I was like, no.
Good third grader. I don't know that I would have identified that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for the second coming. Although our church was not as focused on, like, I think we still didn't think disaster was a good thing. Like, you know, we still like wanted to like help people who were hurting and stuff.
Right.
Just in Mormonism, regular Mormonism. But that leads me to mine, which is just that Putin is a fucking cult leader.
Yep.
And it is so scary for people who are listening in the future and don't know exactly where we're at in the news cycle right now. Like, this is the week that the invasion of Ukraine has begun. Today, now there are like missiles being launched into all of these cities. People are dying. And it is all because Putin has decided that he gets to have Ukraine, and doesn't matter who has to suffer as a result. And what's interesting is I've seen some like snippets of and tweets about just like what the Russian like state media is saying about it. And the propaganda is chilling. I mean, it's talking about how he's actually trying to stop the war, and Ukraine are the bad guys, and and like they don't necessarily have access to a wide range of alternative media. So I'm sure there's so many people in the country who are just taking this in. And they're like, yeah, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because their whole lives are being controlled because authoritarian regimes are just larger cults.
Yeah.
Information control, behavior control, thought control. And the fact that Trump... Oh, God, he's just, I can never, this fucking guy. Did you see what he said about these decisions Putin has made?
Yeah, that they're brilliant.
Yeah, he's called him very savvy and a genius as people's homes are destroyed, as people are fleeing for their lives, as people, that fucking six-year-old child was killed the other day. Like, yeah, real genius. These fucking guys, all the evil guys band together, which is always interesting to me because I'm like, sorry, I'm rambling, but you know what? Fuck it. I'm like, so you guys band together and then what's the plan? Like, you all want to be the ultimate power and be the dominant one. So your plan is to what? Like, dominate everyone else, but then you're just going to have to fight each other. Like, there's no version of this.
Yeah, but it's Survivor, you know, like they're like, fine. And then when it gets to the three of us, we'll fight it out. Then there'll be two of us and we'll fight it out. And then there'll be one of us. And
it's like you're enabling these villains in other countries and giving them more power. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He's not our president right now. Hopefully he won't be again. He's going to run again next time. We'll see. Hopefully he doesn't win. You guys, I'm stressed.
Well, this is another thing Pat Robertson said. He 100% would be reelected president. And 5 years from the day, the world would end. So Pat Robertson loves saying that the world's going to end, loves making predictions that have no basis in reality. He's never like, sorry, that was wrong. He just steamrolls on like nothing was ever said. He's said the world would end multiple times. But
I wish I had the confidence of an evangelist preacher or really anyone who predicts a doomsday. Like, I wish I could just go about the world with that kind of confidence, you know? Yeah, it's gonna happen. No, well, it didn't happen, but that's fine because it's just because it got moved. I know this kind of confidence in myself. Oh
yeah, that'd be really great.
Anyway, it's fucking devastating, and obviously we stand with Ukraine, and fucking man, it is heartening though to see how hard they're fighting back, how much everyone is banded together, and how even, you know, there are protests within Russia against the war. So hopefully this doesn't end in just complete and utter disaster for everyone.
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, so Sinasta is so sweet. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy this interview, although also be saddened a little bit. Okay, here we go, right? Welcome, Sinasta Kaluchi. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we first talked about 12 tribes on the show because of the Marshall Fire in Colorado.
Right.
If anyone didn't hear that episode, apparently, like, so there was that big fire that recently happened in Boulder County, and there was an investigation going on. I think it's still ongoing, but part of it was started, it seemed, on 12 tribes property, and 12 tribes was then the rabbit hole we kind of went down, and that is a group that you used to be a member of, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Cool. So how did you join this group? How did you hear about it? How old were you? What was the deal?
Okay, I had just turned 21, so it was the spring of 2005, and I was looking online for a community. It was kind of a big deal back then. They call them intentional communities. My goal was to find a place where they grow their own food because I was really attracted to that type of lifestyle. I wanted to be a farmer. At the time, I was actually living in Detroit and I was working at a fast food restaurant. So you can imagine with my limited income and my location, it wasn't likely that I was going to have my own farm.
Right.
Also, I had just met my dad for the first time only 2 years prior to that. And he believed that it was close to the end of the world. He talked about Armageddon a lot and the apocalypse. And he told me that a safe place to be would be in a community where they grow their own food.
Wow.
And so you were like 19 when he's telling you that.
Yes.
And you're like, that sounds right.
Yeah. The whole concept sort of appealed to me. So that's what I was searching for.
Why a farmer? Why did that appeal to you?
I guess just the whole aspect of self-sufficiency, sustainability. I had a negative experience in college. I was completely broke, and some days I just didn't even eat. So maybe food scarcity contributed to the way I was thinking about it.
Right.
I just thought it'd be great if I had my own farm and I never had to worry about being hungry again.
Oh. And your mom was not religious, correct?
Correct. Yeah, she had been raised Catholic and at a certain point rebelled against Catholicism. She didn't even really talk about it. I just know that she rejected that belief. And God was never even a word that was spoken in our household growing up.
So your dad, was he a particular religion?
No, he basically created his own thing. He was raised Jehovah's Witness and later became like a sort of a Rastafarian. He has long dreadlocks, but he kind of has his own thing, which is like a mix between the two. It's very individualistic. Yeah. He thinks he's going to be a king of one of the tribes.
Wow.
In the next age.
Wow. So your dad's got his own sort of extreme belief going on there.
Yes.
So 12 tribes, a little bit of background, and correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, was founded in 1972. I read that the guy who founded it was a high school guidance counselor and former carnival barker named Gene Spriggs. And he basically claimed that he was seeking the restoration of the truest form of Christianity. And somehow, I'm unclear on how it flourished so easily, but I read that several thousand communal societies across the U.S. and abroad sprung up. And then also they opened a number of locations of this restaurant called the Yellow Deli.
Yes. I'd say what contributes to the fast growing numbers, I think they've sort of tapered off now. But what contributed to it was that they always wanted to appeal to pretty much everybody. So they present themselves as hippies to hippies. They present themselves as Christian to the Christians. And during that time in the 1970s, there was a lot of so-called Jesus freaks, literally what they called themselves, people that were communally minded. They were a lot like hippies, but they had this whole Christian perspective and they were crazy about Jesus. So they called themselves Jesus freaks. So a lot of those types of people were coming in to the community during that time and became the original leaders of the community, which I said plural leaders. That's another big contributing factor, is that Yonake was always wanting to sort of delegate authority. And he would always say, you know, I'm not the king. He wanted there to be lots of leaders.
That's interesting. That's unique.
Right. So I think that might have also contributed to the growth of the community.
Wow. That's so smart. You build a deli and you make it seem cool for everyone. Who doesn't like food and something that appeals to you? Brilliant.
Who doesn't like food and something that appeals to you?
If you don't, you're the only one.
No, yeah. So it sounds like it's really just a part of this movement in the 70s. There are so many communal groups at that time. And yeah, it's so interesting that like combination of the hippie lifestyle and the sort of Christian framework, because they seem so opposite of each other. But there certainly were a ton of groups that really combined those things. So by the time you joined in 2005.
How did you find it?
So I found the community online. There's actually a program that helps young people like me, connecting young people that want to work on farms with the farmers themselves. It's called Willing Workers on Organic Farms. They have a website.
Wow.
And I'm not completely sure about this, but they might have since then removed the 12 tribes from their website. So I saw them on that site. I got their email address. They have their own website themselves, which I've heard a rumor that they've taken it down ever since this whole, you know, controversy with the fires in Colorado. But they did have a website at that time, and there were email addresses for every community. I got in touch with the community in New York. They have a farm in Bellows Falls. It's called the Basin Farm, and that was where I originally thought I would like to go to. When I got in touch with them, I told them I'm in Michigan. They said that the Midwest would be a better option for me, and that maybe the farm in Missouri. So a little bit closer. As it turns out, they have each tribe is broken down by region. So like they wanted me to stay in my region, as it turns out. So then I got a hold of someone at the Missouri farm and started emailing him.
So there is a website, 12tribes.org. I'm looking at it right now.
It's still up.
It says who you are. There's a people being gathered. The image on the homepage, it's an illustration. I am not trying to be judgmental, but it really looks like it's out of the movie Midsommar, I'm just saying. But it sounds like a really noble idea. Communal living sounds very appealing to me. Growing your own food sounds very appealing to me. All of these things, like, I absolutely get why you'd want to live in a situation like this. I can't believe you just like Googled it and like found your group
Yeah.
So you basically like just move there? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, I started talking to a man that called himself Ben Shimon. As it turned out, that wasn't his real name. His real name was Scott. But when you join the community, they give you names. They give you a new name.
Red flag.
And it's a Hebrew name. So Ben Shimon means son who hears. Started emailing him, and he invited me to come visit. Within a few weeks, I was on a Greyhound bus, got a one-way ticket. I had left my apartment in Detroit. Another man picked me up at the Greyhound station. It wasn't Ben Shimon. It was a man named David.
Can you just describe for us, like, basically the deal is that you work the farm and you get room and board and you get everything taken care of in terms of like your needs met?
Yes.
And do you get paid additionally?
No,
like if you need stuff? No?
No pay.
What if you like need clothes, or what if you want to go buy a book or something?
The clothes would be a yes. They provide you with your basic needs. They don't encourage people to read outside literature. And if there's anything they do want you to read, they'll tell you.
Okay. Yeah. So tell us about those first weeks. Was it exciting? Like, did you make friends? Like, what was that like?
Yes, I was very excited. I felt like I had found my people. And I liked the fact that they put me to work right away, because at that time, it was like I needed my life to have purpose. And I needed to feel like I wasn't just mooching off of somebody. I knew how that had felt in the past, and I hated that feeling. I liked to be productive and feel like I'm contributing to the group.
Who did you feel like you had mooched off of before?
For a year before college, I was living with my mom's friend in Ann Arbor. She actually got evicted from her apartment, and we were having to go to her friends, people I didn't even know, stay at their homes, and we would bounce from house to house like every week. And I was still finishing high school. I was really small and scrawny. I looked like I was 12. And when I went into places to like apply for work, people literally laughed at me. I didn't find any work that whole year. And I was bouncing around from place to place, basically living out of the suitcase.
Wow.
I just felt bad, like I wasn't contributing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, this is important context, Sinasta.
This is my book, by the way.
We will shout your book out. Yeah. What is it called again? Let's just shout it out now.
It's called Better Than a Turkish Prison, What I Learned from Life in a Religious Cult.
Nice.
Awesome. Okay. So you were living this sort of like unstable, really, life. And you get to this place and you're like, I have a home. I can contribute. Like, I have some direction now, basically.
Yep. And I learned all about farming, which was exciting. My first night there, I got to milk the goats. As it turned out, Ben Shimon was the gardener, and he taught me all about gardening. And they assigned him as my shepherd, which is somebody that like guides you. So he was like my mentor from then on.
Wow. That's interesting. Like an AA sponsor, but like a cult sponsor. Yeah.
So was he a single brother as well?
He was, yes.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about what it means to be a single brother and what that looked like?
Yeah. So they have things divided for the sake of order. Obviously, single men and single women are separated. We have separate rooms, and all the single brothers would sleep together in the same room. The single sisters would sleep together in the same room. And the married people would each get their own rooms, all for the sake of order and, you know, fulfilling biblical law about the sanctity of marriage and all that.
I kind of want just a more of a picture of life. Like, were a lot of the people young?
Yeah, there were a lot of children that were born and raised within the community. A lot of young adults that had grown up there and lived there their entire lives. And those people were the most impressive people to me. I was more impressed with them than anyone I had ever met in my life. They were all excellent musicians. They were all very, very friendly, sociable. I mean, they lived with like a ton of other people their whole lives, and they grew up being raised by these like lots and lots of different parental influences, and just being constantly taught and motivated. The children never have like playtime. There's never just, you don't see a kid just sitting on his tablet or, you know, having time alone. They're always with an adult learning something, learning how to cook, learning how to garden, how to milk the goats. They're always being taught something. It was pretty much mandatory that the kids at some point learn an instrument. The boys were encouraged to learn guitar. The girls had their choice of, like, I don't know, violin, and that just happens to be my favorite instrument. I know there were a lot of girls that in the earlier days learned piano, but Yonate started having a problem with piano. It's an obscure Bible reference, but he called it a Nicolaitan instrument. The Nicolaitans are referenced in the Book of Revelation, and they were the ones that wanted to be like the pompous leaders. So he felt like the piano was overpowering, like leading the orchestra too much or whatever.
The Book of Revelation is what this is a lot based on, correct?
A lot of it, yes, because they believe that we're in the end times and it's their job to bring about the end.
So when you like first got there, were they talking to you about their sort of belief system?
Oh yeah, right away.
From the beginning?
The guy, okay. David, that picked me up from the bus station, he had wild frizzy hair. It was like grayish black and a out of control beard and a ponytail. He looked at me and his eyes kind of flickered and he had this weird creepy smile across his face and he said, "We're in a covenant to die to ourselves." And he starts telling me all about the end of the world and what it says in the Book of Revelation. And I didn't understand anything he was saying. Like, I was like, what's that mean? What I thought, is this a suicide pact? What's he talking about? And then he starts talking about the male child. We're raising the male child. He had just gotten done telling me about his son. His son's name was Hananel. And so he's going on and on about the male child. I think he's talking about his son, but really he's talking about the Book of Revelation, the 144,000 that are sent out to be slaughtered. Mm. That's who the 12 tribes believe is also the male child from the Book of Revelation, where it talks about a woman who is pregnant and standing on the moon, clothed with the sun. And then it says she gives birth to a male child and then has to protect the male child, flee to the wilderness where she's being pursued by the beast. So it's this whole like really symbolic illustrative thing in the Book of Revelation. It's referring to a generation of pure children that they're going to raise.
Is it like the re-rising of Christ?
It's like right before
Return of Christ.
So they're going to send out their own children, all males, for some reason, like in pairs of two from each community.
Right.
In the Book of Revelation, it talks about 12,000 from each tribe. So that means they would have to have 6,000 communities in each tribe and send out two perfect, sinless, spotless males from each of those communities in each tribe. So the total sent out would be 144,000.
Is that like Jehovah's Witnesses in that it's like the number of chosen people, 144,000?
Except that in this case, they believe that that's the number of martyrs that they're going to send out at the
Cool. So they made the Book of Revelations even scarier, which is hard to do.
they're sending out their own children to be
killed. That's exciting. Wow. Okay.
And what does that look like exactly?
So what it looks like exactly is that those children would go out and start preaching the gospel and be a distraction while the other community members flee to the wilderness, to a place prepared for them by God.
Wow.
As it says in the Book of Revelation. So while the beast is pursuing them, the 144,000 distract. Basically, they believe the whole world will be evil, led by the Antichrist. And the 144,000, their mission is to find like any good people left that will listen to the gospel.
Oh, wow. And what did you think of that when you heard that?
Oh, I had already heard all that crazy stuff from my dad. So I don't know. It just was like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, the number stuff was already there in Jehovah's Witnesses beliefs. And, you know, he obviously had some apocalyptic beliefs. What else were some of the general teachings and lifestyle stuff?
Well, that one was a big focus because they used that vision in their daily life as like they had a big focus on training the children. So child training was a big aspect.
Like to be martyrs?
Well, they teach the children that their purpose is to be rulers. That's their eternal purpose, to be kings and queens of the universe.
So they would all be kings and queens. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to understand. They would all be kings and queens of the universe, or is it like Mormonism where they would each kind of have their own world?
Yeah, each would have their own world and then galaxy, and then it just keeps spreading.
That's right. So many confused messages. You're a martyr and you're a king and queen.
Yeah, because you get raised up again when you're sacrificed to God. He doesn't just leave you there.
Right.
If you live the hard test life on Earth, then you'll be rewarded basically with the world. Yeah, that's very similar to LDS beliefs, which is what I was raised as. You know, I grew up thinking, yeah, well, one day I get to be God too. That'll be exciting when I have my own world.
what were the weddings like? In your book, I was reading that they're quite the experience.
Yes. So the weddings are designed to be what the 12 tribes calls a pre-enactment, not a reenactment, but a play that pre-enacts what they believe will happen in the end of days, including the male child. I got to actually play the male child.
What?
Not going to recreate that here, but you just run in and you scream and you've got a bloody t-shirt on.
Whoa.
Yes, this is at a wedding. And you scream, "Master!" as you're like clutching your chest.
Oh my God.
And then you,
God.
It's very vivid. It's like, it's a crazy play is what they put on for a wedding. And the groom is the king. He represents Yahshua. Yahshua is what they call Jesus of the Bible.
Okay.
They call the Savior Yahshua. They believe that was his actual Hebrew name. Mm.
Okay.
So, yeah, the groom represents Jesus, or Yahshua, as the 12 tribes would. So he's basically pretending to be Jesus throughout the wedding, and the bride is pretending to be the 12 tribes.
Okay, so you have Jesus, you have the 12 tribes, and then the man child are all the martyrs.
Yeah, so they get a single brother to play the male child. And then you have, there's a point in the wedding where the king calls for his bride. And that's a really beautiful part where it's like what you would expect at a wedding. Like the groom is on the stage and he calls for his bride and she comes running to him. Like that's not too out there. And so they join together. And then there's a dance afterwards called the victory dance. And it's like victory over the enemies. This is where it starts getting really weird. They have like some sort of round thing. It's a round spinny thing with the names of different enemies hanging from it. The groom is supposed to tear down the enemies one by one.
Whoa.
And so you have names like selfishness, greed, all these like really crazy stuff. You wouldn't normally see that at a wedding. There's one that says hatred or envy. I don't know. It's just like all the sins. And he's just tearing down all these enemies.
Wow.
I know pride is a big one. They tell you to deal with your pride. And, you know, they consider that to be a big enemy.
So it's like a play.
And they invite guests. People that have no idea, this is their first
interaction. Like outsiders.
Just random
strangers. Right, so they're like, oh, I'm going to a wedding.
Yeah, they invite a lot of outsiders to the wedding to witness the play. Yeah.
Has anybody joined from coming to a wedding? Because you wrote that people sometimes really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people were very touched by witnessing a wedding and would join afterwards.
Wow. So can you talk to us about some of the recruitment tactics?
Yeah, so my favorite one is there's three big buses that they built. There's the Peacemaker, Peacemaker 2, and then the Hippie bus. The Peacemaker buses are like double decker. They're painted really beautifully, like beige and maroon. The inside is all decked out in wood and upholstered really nicely. The Hippie bus is just an old school bus that they painted to look like a hippie bus. It's got like flowers and little birds and peace signs, different designs that you would expect to see on a hippie bus. It's really colorful. So they take those buses to different events, concerts, festivals, Grateful Dead shows. Before Yonake died, he was obsessed with Bob Dylan. And this was towards the end of my time in the 12 tribes. It was only a few years before he died. He like suddenly became obsessed with Bob Dylan. And he was convinced that Bob Dylan was going to be saved and become a member of the 12 tribes. So he started sending out people to the Bob Dylan concerts. Wherever he went, the 12 tribes were stalking him.
Oh my God.
They wanted to get a free paper into his hands. So like wherever he went, Yonake would send out the local community there to go to the Bob Dylan concert. Sometimes they'd bring their buses.
Wow. It's fascinating how groups will, like their leaders will latch on to some celebrity, often a musician that they think is going to like be a part of their future. Like we've had groups where they believe that Dolly Parton was destined to become a member. I know of a group where they think the Queen is going to come visit them. Like it's really, really interesting. And also whoever they pick is super interesting. Bob Dylan makes sense, I guess, in this case. I get how he would seem to be aligned somehow. I don't know.
Not the worst guy.
Yeah, totally.
Pick.
Is it hard to leave? Do they let people leave easily?
It's very difficult to leave. When you join, you're told to give up all your possessions.
Oh.
If you own a house, you give it up. The community now owns
it. Oh, wow.
Not like as soon as you visit them, but once you're baptized.
Oh.
if you've heard the gospel and they convince you to be baptized, it's you're making a covenant for life. And you do as they say, and you give up all your possessions, as it says in the book of Acts, to the apostles, which are the leaders of the community.
So that's what the religion I was raised was based on, that exact thing. So it's very interesting that the two went in such separate directions.
You didn't have anything to really sign over to them when you first joined, though, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was like, what am I giving up? 100? Like, because they would teach you that whatever you give up, you get 100 times more. They get that from the book of Luke. And I'm like, what am I going to get? 100 times more debt? They laugh at
me. Yeah, right.
So there are a few things that people kind of see as red flags in this group. And I saw you did a sort of an AMA on Reddit. And one of the things that came up was this doctrine of a small reed-like rod to punish children. And you were kind of saying, and you can say it in your own words, but you were kind of saying, like, while that is not great, I would say that abuse of children is not like the big takeaway from the group. Can you kind of talk more about that?
So in hindsight, what I would say was abusive was more psychological.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I still, to this day, I believe that a lot of the accusations against them were exaggerated. Mm. I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just trying to tell it like it is. I do have criticisms for them too, but you hear all these horror stories, like children getting beaten with wooden mallets and just children getting beaten bloody. And when you read media stories about the 12 tribes, it's stuff that you would never see in one of their communities. Like, if it happened at all, it was on an individual level. This isn't something that they were taught. What they were taught very specifically was the Proverbs. There's one proverb that says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child. That's the one everyone knows. Mm-hmm. It says, don't be afraid to beat your child. If you beat them, you'll save their soul from death. If you beat them, they will not die. So they are taught those things.
My parents said that all the time.
They're also instructed how to do it, to be a, you know, a spanking on the bottom with a flexible, thin wooden rod. Now, what I currently believe, this wasn't what I believed at the time. Obviously, I took in like everything they told me and I went with it. But what I currently believe is the consensus among psychologists that spanking a child damages them psychologically. Yeah. I don't believe that the way the 12 tribes do it, or the way they're taught to do it, if they do it right, I don't believe that it causes lasting physical harm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The worst I've seen was little, like, I hate to sound like I'm cruel and like I don't care. I'm just like trying to bring the truth, like compare it to the exaggerations. I've seen little red marks, like little red lines, not like broken skin or anything, but like little red marks that go away after a little while. Mm. I also don't like what they spank children for. That part is also cruel, I believe. They'll spank them for just playing.
Oh, really?
Because a child is supposed to be focused all the time. They call it dissipating if a child's playing. Telling jokes and laughing excessively, they'll call it foolishness. So they're really, really strict about it. So that's why I say that the most abuse within the communities is psychological, not physical. I've witnessed a lot of psychological abuse.
Right. So they're basically teaching kids that fun is bad.
Fun is bad. Yeah. You're being raised to be royalty. You wear a diadem after you're baptized, which signifies that you're going to have a crown placed on your head. You're going to be a king or a queen. So you're being raised as such. You can't just be a commoner just playing like a common child.
That's really sad. I appreciate the distinction you're making, because when people sensationalize a cultic group, it tends to take the focus away from the psychological abuse, and then it just really becomes all about someone being physically harmed, which obviously should never ever happen. But the more lasting damage tends to be in the psychological realm.
Exactly.
So I personally do not think anyone should spank their child, and definitely not hit them with an instrument. I think that is wrong.
To be clear, that's what I believe now, is that spanking damages a child psychologically. Right. I do not spank my child. I have an 8-year-old son. I've definitely changed my opinion since
then. But it breaks my heart, though, that a kid would just be literally being a kid. Play is so important for a development into a human. Like, I can't imagine the lasting damage that would do if you get punished every time you just like experience joy, basically. It's really sad.
Right.
Did you have any romantic interests?
A few times, yes. The first time, it was after I'd been there for 2 years. I want to get the facts straight. There was a festival, and some people came through from California. One of them was Mevis Ser. He was like a tribal leader. He was kind of like Yonig's right-hand man, but he hadn't been there since the beginning. He was quite a bit younger than Yonig. So Yonig kind of took him on, mentored him, and he became a tribal leader for the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
He came through with his family, and his oldest daughter, he had adopted her. She was mixed like me. I believe she was 19 at the time. If I had been there 2 years, I would have been 23. Mm-hmm. And when I saw her, I just thought she was beautiful. And after they had been there a day or two, I started having thoughts about, like, could this be my wife? Because, you know, at that time I had a very religious mentality, and they teach you that God will provide you with a wife if you're faithful.
Right.
So I started having a lot of deep thoughts about being a husband and a father. And so then I eventually worked up the nerve to go to Mevis Ser directly and talk to him. I later got corrected for that, because apparently that's not the right chain of command. You're supposed to go to your shepherd first, and then they go to your heads of households, and then they ask the father of the girl you're asking about.
Wow, I can't believe you made that mistake, Sanasta.
But yeah, it was horrible of me to go to the father of the girl I was interested in. And
was she interested in you?
I asked about her, and he gave us permission to write letters to each other. They eventually went back to California, and I was still in Missouri.
Mm. And do girls get a say in who they marry?
I don't really know. Like, I don't know if anybody really gets a say, because it's like the married couples that have been there the longest, they make up what's called the social leaders. Like, they have social meetings in each community, and they actually decide who to put together.
Wow.
Okay.
It's weird. So they can tell you, like, if you can and can't get married, who you can marry. And as a single brother, you're always told, like, well, I said this already, that God will provide you. You'll be given a wife. So it's sort of like a possession. They even refer to it as, like, your most prized possession.
Oh, God.
So it's like this thing that, towards the end of my time in the community, that was one of the things that really bothered me. Like, how can you treat a human being like a possession to be given to
right.
somebody? But that's how you're taught to look at women as a single brother. I didn't feel like they had a say in it.
Could you tell us, I don't know, you might be uncomfortable, but you did write about it, but just what they would encourage the single guys to do after showers?
Oh, yeah, right. Before.
Excuse me.
Let's be clear about that. It was before a shower. Yeah, they encouraged the single men to masturbate, and it was every few days you're supposed to masturbate to control your urges.
Oh.
Yeah, they don't think it's a sin.
Wow, that's unusual.
I was surprised. With my limited experience in religion, I had a view of what I thought was holy and unholy, and my impression of masturbation was that it was entirely unholy. So when I found out that they do that, actually my first reaction was, wait, Ben Shimon? Like, I thought of him as this man of God. Like, they're like, yes, everybody does. And I'm like, what about Yahshua? They're like, yeah, he did that too.
Wow, they told you that Jesus masturbated?
Man, and he was tempted as a man, so he would have had to.
But you just weren't supposed to think about anything sexual. You were just supposed to let your mind go blank.
It was supposed to be a mechanical release. A mechanical release. Don't think. Yeah. So you're sitting there in the shower going, don't think about girls. Don't think about girls. Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah,
did you have internet? Did I ask you this already? Was there internet there?
Some of the leaders could. Some people were appointed to use the internet. And a lot of those men, surprise, got caught looking at.
Oh,
I'm shocked.
I was not one of them. I never used the computer.
You mean men look at porn? What?
But to be clear, I never mastered the art of mechanical release. Just to be clear on that, that one I was not ever able to do. Obviously, the thoughts do.
Yeah, because you're a human being.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw something on Reddit about butt wiping and how even that was dictated. Oh, can you tell us what that was?
These are the two things they always quote me on in the media. any story you see with my name on it, it's going to be like, yeah, Synostis says, and masturbation, Synostis says butt liking.
Sorry.
And it's like, those are the two things that, yes, there's a teaching on every aspect mm-hmm. of life, including how to wipe your butt so as to use the least amount of toilet paper, to be efficient, to help your community save money. It was all about, you know, efficiency. You're supposed to use no more than 4 squares toilet paper. So you fold 4 squares into 1 square, you wipe, you fold, you wipe again, you fold again, and you've got this tiny little square when you're done that's just covered in poop.
Oh my God.
That's how you're supposed to wipe your butt. If you're using more than 4 squares, you're in sin. You're going against the anointing. That's what they call it. They call the teachings the anointing.
Not gonna lie, guys, I am living in sin in that case. Okay, guys, stay tuned next week for the rest of his story. But anyway, Megan.
Yes.
Would you join 12 tribes?
You know, it seems fun to farm, but no, I also, it's too constrictive and it just sounds absolutely awful. But I can see being drawn to the farming aspect of it, or living off your own land or something like that. So I get how he got there, but personally, I don't think I could stay for more than a minute.
I don't see you doing a lot of manual labor.
No, I mean, you're right.
I don't see myself doing a lot of manual labor either. But I do, like, always, in the back of my head, I kind of am just always going through my life thinking, well, it's cool because when I live in a cabin somewhere and I'm growing my own food and I'm off the grid, everything will be fine. I'll be able to take care of myself.
Right.
Like, that's like sort of just always lingering there in the back of my brain somewhere. I'm like, well, I do desperately want to have at least own a cabin. I don't know if I'll live in it full time, but I do want to have a cabin. And I love the idea of sustainable living. I'm like very freaked out about climate change. I'm very freaked out about the state of the world in general and being reliant on oil and all kinds of things that make me just want to like go off the grid. I don't think I could do it for any length of time, but I do see the appeal of a situation like this, especially if it involves, there's a community there, like commune living, I actually do find very appealing in theory. I don't think in practice I would be able to stay for longer than a week, but in theory, it seems really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I live with 4 people right now, like in a house, and I would call that community living, and I'm obsessed with it. So I do like
that. Yeah. You guys, Megan's living situation is so fun. She lives with 4 people.
Four boys.
Yeah. And they're all creatives, and they all just like make music together and like film video together and just collaborate. It's like, it's the dream. If you're going to have roommates, if you have to have roommates, that's the best version of it.
This makes me want to live communally forever. But yeah, it's just how strict the environment got as soon as he got to the farm. I hate it.
Well, primarily the fact that they had to sign their assets away is that's the biggest red flag right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will talk more about it next week.
We sure will. I can't wait. Remember to have a fabulous week and to follow your gut. Watch out for red flags and never,
ever trust me.
Bye.